It's my pleasure to be here. It's been an extremely interesting day. I really enjoyed listening to all the stories, and Nora, you were so inspirational and telling your story and getting that news out. I'd love to write. I've written it down. I'm going out to get your book. I want to read it. Yeah. I know Jonathan talked about how difficult it was to condense everything you do. You know, we've got the pages, but I scribbled half of it out. So we'll go from there. I'll give you a little bit of history about the Welland Heritage Council. Has been around for 38 years, and we welcome newcomers to the Niagara region. We do all the immigration paperwork that is required for immigration purposes, and we have an emergency shelter on the top floors of our building, which we now own for $2. I bought it from the city, and got a grant for $500,000 to retrofit it. So we have that building. We rent another location for the employment solutions. We have land, hoping to build a whole new center with lots of new grand ideas. And we were given that money from the provincial government, so we're beggars all the time trying to get funding. And we have an office. We had a full-service office in Niagara Falls, but with the cuts in funding, we are now located within the library and offer services there every Friday afternoon for the newcomers who can't reach us at our Welland office or by appointment. My staff will go down to Niagara Falls to help whoever needs to get help there. So we see a myriad of issues that we have to address, and we built a monument, one of our crowning glories, to the contribution of immigrants who came to Welland and the Niagara region to dig the Welland Canal from all over the world, and have really built this whole region, and from their little shanty towns, built their homes and stayed here when all the industries opened up because of the Welland Canal opening. So we go back that far in the history with the cultural groups who put their money together and bought cultural halls, and so that they could keep their languages, their traditions, and their cultures within their own little communities. So in 1976, my parents, they say they immigrated from Quebec and came to Welland, and they were the only ones of my very extensive family to come here. And from those two people, there are now 80 of us since I was, you know, have the luxury of having 10 brothers and 2 sisters and come from a family of 13 children. So I could give you testimonials and stories about that, but that would take forever and it'd probably be about 2 books, right? The people who come to our center have to give us their testimonials or their stories. It's part of the immigration process. In the 1990s, we had 12,000 refugees come through Niagara borders, and they were coming through all the borders. So it was becoming very difficult, and there was extreme challenges in maybe finding these people or them finding us, so that they wouldn't run into vulnerable situations that they had to deal with. So the multicultural centers in Niagara, and there are 4 altogether. These the Folk Arts Council of St. Catharines, and the Fort Erie Multicultural Center right at the border, and then I'm the middle corridor between Welland and Niagara Falls. So we came together to look at what was happening with this huge influx of people. It was the first time in 1993 was when the government first allowed the border to open to people from Africa, the African countries. So we saw a huge influx of people that were visible minorities from Burundi, Congo, Rwanda, wherever there was wars and there was issues and civil unrest, we knew the people were going to come. So the Fort Erie Multicultural Center, because they were closest to the border, brought together a group of people, all the partners, Dana and I were part of that team, and we developed a way to bring people through one border, and that was through Fort Erie, as the Canadian embassy was on the other side of the border, and there's a shelter there called Casa Vive, who had legal counsel there to help people. So that we streamlined all the services so that Casa Vive was the contact organization on the American side for people to go to get appointments at the border, and then they were given the appointments to come through, meet with the immigration officers, where they're now fingerprinted and pictures, and it's a whole day process. There was nowhere for the parents to feed their children, for moms to nurse their babies. There was no food. There was nothing in that room. It was just a square room with nothing, one washroom. So the organizations helped and supported the Fort Erie Multicultural Center in putting together the newcomers services at the bridge. So there's now a nice location there where parents can feed their babies and have food. And Salvation Army, Red Cross got together and provided the food along with some of the church groups in that area. So we have a lot of outreach in the community and access to people and organizations that will help us. So when I use the term we, nothing is done in a multicultural center as an I, because we have to reach out to so many people to get services done for those kinds of things. So when we had those people coming, we didn't have enough shelters in the area. And the places that were there were motels. They were really horrible, particularly families with children. So Red Cross and Salvation Army were key supporters of getting people what they needed in terms of that. And I remember sitting on the floor in the middle of a motel room telling people where they were, giving them little maps, bringing all my staff in all hours of the night to just to make them feel more comfortable, organizing with legal aid and bringing busloads in from wherever they were to get appointments to be able to pay for their legal counsel for the immigration process. So we were strong partners, and Dayanara was invaluable in the terms that she could speak the Spanish language when we had the huge amounts of people who came from the Spanish communities, from Venezuela, from Colombia, and we still have that migration happening to this day. The borders have, because of the different situations with the immigration process, and I think when Jason Kenney came along, they started to make drastic changes in the way people could come. And the usual way was to come through Buffalo, through New York, and then to Buffalo and migrate towards the border. They've sort of stopped that, unless you were from one of the countries that are still allowed to bring people in. Then the family reunification was okay, was still in force. You were able to bring your family members, and that has slowed down. So things have changed. We're getting about 100 people a month right now. But we're seeing huge secondary migration because people who came through our centers in this small area have now started to come back because the cost of living and the quality of living in Niagara is far superior to living in Montreal, Toronto, or Vancouver, where people migrated to get jobs. So those are some of the issues and challenges that we faced. When we saw so many people coming in, one of the huge things that we saw was people in the community didn't know how to react. And so we had a lot of visible minorities. We had a lot of Spanish-speaking people all at one time. When we had that huge of a migration, it changed and altered the structure of the community. So racism reared its ugly head. Women who, had little accents that went into the schools, and the school secretaries and the officials said they couldn't understand them. So we were getting calls every day to go to the school and bring interpreters. They were treated very rudely, and that's how they felt. I was hearing, because I would get the women together and talk to them about what was happening, how are you feeling, what some of the issues are. The co-op housing that they were going into wouldn't even allow a woman who had a degree, she had a master's degree in psychology, they wouldn't let her sit on the board. And when she did, they sat and purposely turned their back to her. They wouldn't even speak or look at her in the meetings. So, and we quickly found out that there's no one who governs those co-ops. They govern themselves. So there was so many issues that we had to deal with at one time that I decided to bring together the leaders of the different cultures. And we brought them together in a room. They finally brought their husbands. We called the school administrators. The superintendents came because it became such a hot issue, and we were televising. So we wanted volunteers from each of the cultural groups, and they came forward willingly. Some were terrified to speak in public, but I wanted to give them the power to make these changes. So every month we met with all the school officials, and the schools were the only ones who wouldn't let us televise the program. But landlords, tenants, housing, co-op housing, and I was so proud of those women. They stood up and they spoke and they talked about how their neighbors wouldn't talk to them, how they were treated on co-op boards, what were the issues of getting their children into schools. And we picked, I mean, even getting a bank account was horrific. We had to get up out of the chairs and go to the banks with them. Otherwise, they wouldn't. And they went in with Ontario Works checks to start with because they have no choice but to take Ontario Works. And they, believe me, they didn't want to take Ontario Works. They wanted jobs and they wanted to be working. But they have to wait until they get their employment authorizations before they can do that. So storytelling and talking is a natural phenomenon within our organization, and we hear so many different stories. You have to weigh what you can deal with and what you can't. The coalition of women and the teams then were the trainers that went back into their communities to train. So it reduced some of the impact that we were facing in terms of the shortage of staff that we had, so that they could go out, be the trainers. We'd give them the videos from the television shows that were done, and they had that as a reference to go back and train within the community. From that, we heard about the international professionals that were there, in particular the doctors, and we heard about, I'm sure you've all heard the coined phrase, doctors driving taxis and doctors driving, delivering pizza. And I have one cute story about one man who went to be the chicken killer. He said, "I used to use my knife to heal people, but now I'm using my knife to kill chickens." And that's the job that he was doing, and trying to save enough money to write the examinations. We went to Venture Niagara, and we got a pot of $50,000 to remove some of the barriers the doctors were facing in the cost of writing the examinations, and it was approximately $10,000 to $12,000 for them to do that. It took approximately 3 years for them to rewrite all their examinations to get through to be recertified. And even if they did all that at that time, there was only 25 seats that could be taken by international professionals in Ontario. Across the provinces out west, there were zero or maybe one. Due to the work that we all did, my husband was a big proponent of that, and we started a doctor's group with five of the most disheartened people you ever wanted to meet. They didn't know where to turn, and the information given by the Ministry of Health was so horrendous that they just didn't even know how to get through that process. So we worked with the Ministry of Health, we worked with the doctors, and those doctors told all the other doctors. We had at one point 150 doctors coming to our meetings from all across Ontario. I reached out to the other multicultural centers from Windsor and Kitchener. There was long-standing groups that were doing that work in those areas, so we partnered with them. Went to one of our members of parliament at the time, Peter Cormos. He got us a room in the legislature, and with the help of the Canadian Association of South Asians and Uzma Shakir, we were able to get the Toronto Star on board. And they came in, and we had about 200 doctors at that meeting that signed their name to a document that allowed the Toronto Star to print their name and their medical specialty underneath it. And they did a two-page spread and said shortage of doctors in red with a question mark, and the two-page spread with the name of all of these doctors. They set up a website, and then the government followed suit and set up another website for all the doctors to implement and put their names in, and we had 600 hits in 1 week. So Omni TV came down to do a story of our study group. The Ministry of Health, after many Saturdays and weekends at University of Toronto, and working with the doctors themselves, we revised all the information on the process of getting recertified in Canada. They wouldn't let us put up the website information that we developed after all that work, but they did develop from our work, they developed a new study programs that we could use in a the study service. So we did a fundraiser to raise $7,000 to buy the medical books that the doctors needed in our area, because they had to go to Toronto to get any kind of books that were relevant or current to study from. So we had we built a medical library in our center and gave the doctors a key. They used our key on the weekends to study. We went out to the community to find doctors in this area who would come back and teach the new people coming in. So Saturday mornings we had study sessions, and people traveled from all over to come to these study sessions, just try to get through the examination. So it was doctors helping doctors who made it possible. And out of that first team of 45 that were coming to the classes at that time, 9 of them became certified within 2 years. And so we were able to escalate that program. So that program is still in place. When we met with the Minister of Health, he upped the number of seats for the doctors to go into to 200 from 25. And we found out that the government then, the Ontario College of Physicians and Surgeons, was selling seats behind the back door at $60,000 a seat for internationals who were trying to fast track from different countries. So we made it public. When we met with the Minister of Health, we said, "You hold the purse strings, make this a fair process." And he said, "I will, Claire." And I brought 2 doctors who told their stories. And so he stopped them from doing that, and the 200 seats were occupied by the doctors who were already here in Canada. During that time, we lost a huge amount of talent. Many of the doctors got so frustrated with the process that they went to out west. My chicken killer guy went to Manitoba, and he still keeps in touch with me. And many of them went to the United States, and some doctors were so disheartened. We had a cardiologist who trained doctors in the United States and in Canada and from Germany, and he went back to Germany because he just couldn't get through this process. So we lost a huge amount of talent. So we found that there was other professions that had the same type of barriers: teachers, doctors, lawyers, accountants, psychologists. I wrote a proposal to the government called the Canadian Access for International Professionals and Skilled Trades. We were able to get some funding to start a small center in Welland, and I partnered with later on to be my husband, Rudy, and we worked together to in St. Catharines and Welland, and actually Brock University was a big part of that. Brock University came on board and did a mentorship program with us to get some help for people who were trying to get back and get recertified. And we did have one of your people from HR on our board who changed the way people were treated at the front desk when they came in, academics from other countries. So we had a lot of help here at this university with some of the work that we were doing. And I know that it followed suit in many other universities in different parts across Canada, because we work with a lot of the other multicultural centers who took some of the things that we did. And in the situation with the doctors, it became an international conference that came here to Toronto, and we were asked to be on the panel, my husband and I, and Australia took the issue to the Supreme Court and won, as did BC. So that's why the new seats opened up in that part of the area, part of Canada. So lots of changes, and it took the media, it took the stories being published, it took the testimonials of the one father whose son was working in a nursery. He was 25 years old, and he was studying around the clock. And from working in the nurseries, he was subjected to some of the chemicals that were there, and he just died on the couch. And so that became a huge driving force of what the doctors had to go through. We had to fight with social services who wouldn't give them their funding unless they went to work. So they were trying to work and trying to study at the same time. And some of the other professionals still had some of those other barriers that we were dealing with. So we took on the teachers' union as well, Ontario Teachers College. We still have a teacher who went through that process. She teaches in our center, and she's recertified. And one of the Brock University professors here, his wife, went through that system, and she's teaching with us. And we did a television program on that as well. So we kept taking it to the media, all these situations. And because of the program we developed for the Canadian Association of International Professionals and Skilled Trades, we became a full-service office because our expertise is in trying to remove the barriers for immigrant professionals. And working now, they formed, the government has Jean Augustine, the Honorable Jean Augustine, runs the Fairness, she's the Fairness Commissioner, and that was opened up after we started all this issue with the doctors and the other professionals. So we've seen some changes, and I can't remember which I think it was you that said you now see the changes within the community. We see the food stores from the different cultures. You see, the new things that are out there for, dry goods, clothing, all those types of things. We're seeing the changes that are coming. The other issues that we deal with a lot is the family violence issues. I have many daughters who call me their Canadian mom because they're still here in this country where we see men who marry women from other countries. And when they get, too Canadianized, they take them back to their countries and drop them off. And we've had to work with embassies and ministers to get some of these girls back in the country where they've been left. I had one lady left with $62, her and her son, and we had to, the only thing she had was my business card, and she couldn't speak English because she was left out in the country where she couldn't have access to English language classes. So those are just the tip of the iceberg of some of the things that we deal with. So we go further afar than just teaching English as a second language in our classrooms. We do all kinds of workshops on the systems of living and working in Canada, and we are strong advocates for some of the social justice issues. And the storytelling goes on and on to make change with some of the social justice and human rights issues that we see people facing. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.